Welcome to Newsworthy with Norisworthy. Get ready for some awesome.
Today on the show, we have all the way from Vermont, Mr. Zach Hoag. Welcome to the show, Zach.
Hey, thank you. Good to be here.
Zach has written a book entitled Nothing But the Blood, The Gospel According to Dexter. This, coincidentally, has turned out to be the first of what's going to be almost a month of death on the Newsworthy with Norisworthy podcast. We've got an Ash Wednesday podcast we're going to do, going off a blog series a buddy of mine has done named Josh Gray's entitled Waking Up to Death. And then after that, we're going to talk to an author named Richard Beck about his book Slavery of Death. So what a better way to kick off this month of death than talk about a serial killer?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Now,
That's awesome.
We've got a little nice Canadian named Sarah Bess who's coming on next week, so hopefully she'll bring a ray of sunshine into this otherwise macabre month of podcasting.
Nice.
Okay,
I love Sarah.
Oh, good, good. Well, first of all, we're not going to talk about Sarah today. We're going to talk about this book. Now, cool. I had seen this book tweeted probably about 2 years ago, and I'd never seen the show Dexter before, but there was a pastor from Houston named Chris Say. That his name?
C, I think. Yeah.
I had a buddy who was in Houston and was going to that church for a few months, so I started following him on Twitter, and then I saw this, and then being the good podcast host that I am, I watched the entire series just to prepare for this podcast. But you have no excuse for watching such a vile show. You don't have an excuse. So what in the world would make you, as a pastor, write a book entitled The Gospel According to Dexter?
Yeah, that's a great question and a common response. I think what folks typically do when I tell them that I've written a book about this serial killer who kills serial killers is sort of like, what on earth could that ever have to do with Jesus? And so I honestly just straight up, I love TV. That's really what
I love your honesty. I just like TV.
Ever since I was a kid, man, I just loved television. I don't know if that's because I was, you know, kind of overweight and unpopular as a child, but I just love TV. So.
Well, I think you can be popular and underweight and love TV. We had a guy named Shane Hips on before, and he had this line that the screen always wins. The screen always wins. And that is true even with the silver screen or the little screen in your house. The screen always wins. So when it comes to Dexter, how could a serial killer be as relatable as the character Dexter Morgan is?
Yeah, he, you know, and that I think is the beauty and the power of the show is that for some reason there's something unbelievably human about this character. And we tend to demonize criminals and especially violent criminals and extreme criminals like serial killers. It just doesn't help to give them a human face. In order for us to kind of function socially or legally or whatever, but for some reason this character puts a human face on something that is extremely vile, and makes it relatable. Makes it, you know, like this is something that it connects to my experience. Yeah.
Did you see the stuff on Rolling Stone a few months back when they had the cover with the bomber from the Boston Marathon?
I think I saw some of the controversy, read a bit of the article, yeah.
Wasn't that part of the controversy, or at least the way I understood it, was that they were trying to humanize this guy who is a mass murderer, and no one wanted to see that. Well, obviously, Dexter is not a mass murderer in that sense, that he's not killing innocent people. You made a comment earlier that he's a serial killer who kills serial killers. Do you think that changes the reception that people have of him?
Yeah, I think it does, and I think it's the beginning of kind of the redemptive element in the storyline that there is this darkness about this character, and yet he's attempting to channel it towards something good or just, and that's kind of where the redemptive element enters in.
Your book was written after the sixth season. There's actually eight total seasons, and so you kind of had to guess where the thing was going, and I think you hit the nail on the head in that you made the argument that basically the story of Dexter is about him becoming human. And let me read this quote from your book. It says, Season one, episode one begins with this ominous narration. It sets the stage for the first kill that we witness at the hands of a man called Dexter. It begins the story of a fictional icon, a broken image bearer of God caught in an endless cycle of fragmentation. In this way, he serves to exemplify the dissocial direction in which sin is taking the whole human race. You want to unpack that for the rest of us?
Yeah, I think that basically when we kind of start to understand sin in relational terms, rather than in strictly moral or ethical or legal terms, then we start to see something really powerful emerge in this character. His struggle is to be connected to other human beings. That's really the thing that he can't seem to capture. He can't seem to get his hands around, his arms around. And so his story is one in which there is this progressive spiral away from connection and toward isolation, and that really is what sin does.
So explain sin if it's not this legal experience where you've caused this, a break between you and God. What do you mean by it's a relational aspect of sin?
Yeah, well, I think we see it in the narrative itself that it begins with a broken relationship between these first or these representative human beings, Adam and Eve, and God and the Creator, the Source. You know, and there's a sense in which that first act is not disobeying a monolithic rule book or even just kind of dad's guideline for do not taste, do not touch, but really is an act of separation. It's an act of rebellion. It's an act of independence. And in that sense, it's a relational kind of act. And that story continues to play itself out, I think, throughout the narrative. And we begin, of course, to see how that resonates with our lives too.
So Dexter is this broken individual, and you make the statement that Harry Morgan, which is his father, or his adopted father, was the beginning of Dexter's salvation. Rita Bennett, who becomes his wife, starts the process of a deeper restoration. How is, first of all, his father the beginning of his salvation, and then his wife a deeper restoration?
Yeah. His father believes that he's redeemable, not fully, and we begin to see the flaws even in Harry's attitude towards Dexter as the series unfolds. But initially, and in the basic sense, he believes that his son can be helped. He believes that his son can be redeemed, and that's why he gives Dexter the code, and he says something to the effect of, "You're my son. I love you. That's never going to change. You're a good kid. If you were a bad kid, you would have done worse things. So let's try to fix this, or channel this, or put guidelines or boundaries around this, and redeem it in some way." And so that, I think, is the sense in which Dexter, there's a light that enters into this very dark situation through him.
And how does his wife Rita continue that?
And Rita, you know, she was one of my favorite characters in the series, and I think honestly in the later seasons the writers attempted to create similar kinds of characters but never really got it. Rita, I think, even though she never fully understands or knows Dexter's true identity, she connects with him in a way that no one has ever connected with him before. And he, for the first time in his life, feels love toward another human being. And he doesn't understand exactly what that means or what it looks like, but he really genuinely feels this kind of love and attachment to her. And so it goes even further, I think, than his relationship with his dad.
Really? Now, how can he really feel loved if he's never fully vulnerable and open with Rita like he is with later characters in the story?
it's still, there's an intangible there that I can't quite put my finger on.
Yeah.
But I think it's, I believe it was season five, where it opens, or in early episodes, her funeral, and he just begins to talk about his love for her, and it's profound. And I don't think there was ever an example of that. I mean, we could argue that his love for Deb is similar, but I think the kind of love that he had for Rita is really unique.
Interesting. Now, I felt the tension in season two when the evil character in season two was the British woman he meets in Alcoholics Anonymous. Lila, is that her name,
Lila,
right?
Yes,
Lila,
yes.
And it's, in some ways, her character was Dexter's beginning to connect with someone in a very, like, transparent way about his darkness inside of him. And you see that kind of develop with Miguel Prado.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's the next season, and he starts to see more inside of him. And yeah, eventually you get at the end of the story where there's Hannah, who's also a serial killer, that right, really connects with Dexter and who he is. And so I've always felt that Dexter needed someone who had that element of darkness inside of them
right,
to really connect with him, whereas Rita never would really be able to love who Dexter truly was.
Yeah. And I think that's a good argument. I think, though, that Dexter even makes the point, and I'm not sure where this exactly happens, that whenever he does become vulnerable with someone, he ends up having to kill them.
Yeah.
and so he kills Lila, he kills Miguel. And I think there is a tension there about, who is Dexter really? You know, is he the dark passenger, or is he the good kid that Harry identified early on? And by giving in to the dark passenger, which is what he does with Miguel and Lila, he said, he kind of embraces his darkness. That actually kind of backfires. But when he is trying to be maybe his better self, there is something more healthy or beautiful that emerges. It's an argument because, maybe there isn't honesty in that latter option, but it does seem to kind of be a tension. Hannah is an interesting study because she, she accepts him, but then there is still kind of this sense in which, he's trying to be better. So there's an interesting tension there.
Yeah. Well, before we jump into the dark passenger, let's talk about with Rita, that he's trying to make it work with her. And that yeah, ultimately in season four is what ends up with her getting killed by one of the serial killers that he's trying to learn from and emulate and say, well, if this guy can keep a normal life and still be able to kill people, like, which is the John Lithgow character right, they gave the title Trinity to, he tries to emulate that and say, well, maybe I can do this with Rita if Trinity can do it. And obviously Trinity right, is not doing it very well.
Right, right.
And so it seems that I felt like the relationship with Rita was flawed from the beginning because it would never work. But you're saying that's pulling him out of the darkness and trying to push him towards a better reality.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's possible to read it in a couple of different ways. I think maybe more of the emotional impact it had on me as a viewer was that I saw great hope in that relationship, maybe in a future disclosure or something like that, that she, because of her love for him and the tenderness of it and the sense, I think that just, it felt very real. It felt very grounded, mm-hmm, that there would be the possibility of real healing in that relationship, on the involvement of children, things like that. I think that gave me a lot of hope, and that's what made the final episode so devastating. But
the final episode of season four, that was terrifying. But it wasn't just a transformative love for Dexter; it also transformed Rita. Rita changes as a character, especially from the end of season one, or the beginning of season one to the beginning of season two. I mean, she's a completely different person then.
Agree.
So yeah, it's very interesting. Well, let's jump right into the Dark Passenger, which you mentioned beforehand. And I don't know if there's a better speech scene in any TV show than Dexter's AA scene when he's talking about his Dark Passenger. I'm going to go and play this off the YouTube, and we can watch it.
I just know there's something dark in me. I hide it. I certainly don't talk about it. But it's there. Always. dark passenger. And when he's driving, I feel alive. Half sick with the thrill, the complete wrongness. I don't fight him. I don't want to. He's all I've got. Nothing else could love me. Not even... especially not me. Or is that just a lie the dark passenger tells me? Because lately there are these moments when I feel... connected to something else. Someone. It's like... the mask is slipping. And things... people who never mattered before are suddenly starting to matter. It scares the hell out of me.
Oh, Dexter. Gotta love that guy. Okay, so that's Dexter introducing the Dark Passenger. How would you describe the Dark Passenger to someone who's never watched the show?
Yeah, you know, the Dark Passenger is this this name given to Dexter's dark side, to this this problem, this addiction, this flaw that he senses within himself toward killing, and this tendency toward killing, this desire to kill, that is deeply ingrained in him. In which he can't seem to eradicate. And so the Dark Passenger takes over when Dexter decides to kill or to stalk and hunt and then kill a victim. And the Dark Passenger really is, you know, it's like a big sort of grotesque version of the sin nature. It's this unstoppable thing within him that he must give into at times and you know, make these bad choices.
Do you think the Dark Passenger is a universal experience that everyone has to wrestle with?
You know, I think so. I think obviously if we're you know, looking, and I think even the Dexter writers and the original author of the novels, they were clear in saying that psychologically that there's probably a flaw in the storyline. Dexter is a serial killer who is made by an experience of witnessing violence, whereas it looks, according to most research, like serial killers or people who have these kinds of proclivities are probably born, not made. And so there's a sense in which we, you know, have to kind of grapple with some of that. But I do think that there is something universal about an urge or a proclivity or a tendency within us towards doing what we know is wrong that we just can't seem to fully master, that we make the wrong choice and it seems like we can't stop doing it. Much like the Apostle Paul said, you know, the thing that I want to do, I can't do. The thing I don't want to do is what I end up doing. So, yeah.
Good. Well, yeah. I was preaching through the temptation narrative in Luke's gospel while I was watching Dexter, and I might have referred to the Satan figure as the Dark Passenger once or twice in that sermon. It just slipped in. I couldn't help myself. Mm. I couldn't. So I'm going to pretend like it's true that I can do that. Now, you you make the observation in your book that at the end of – I guess it's – season four, right before Rita's death, right. Dexter makes the statement, maybe one day, not so long from now, I'll be rid of the Dark Passenger. Mm. And you heard that in that quote that he's starting to feel like maybe the Dark Passenger is slipping away. So it's almost like he has that expectation that maybe this isn't permanent for him.
Yes, right. Yeah. Yeah. And the reason for that, sorry to interrupt, but the reason for that is, I think, the experience of connection. Maybe going back to that relational point, as he experiences real, authentic connection, maybe a restored sense of connection with these people in his life, he begins the dark passenger seems to be shrinking.
Yeah.
In some way. Yeah.
Now, in the season with the Lumen character, the girl who's been victimized by a group of gentlemen that Dexter helps her get rid of.
Yeah.
At the end, she leaves Dexter. It's this terrible moment because that's like the first time it seemed like he had a real relationship with someone who knew his darkness inside of him. So this is season five, I guess. And at the end, Dexter says, "Don't be sorry your darkness is gone. I'll carry it for you."
Right.
And so he's aware that her darkness can leave, but his isn't gone yet.
Yeah.
And so he has this realization that someone else's darkness can go, but maybe mine can't. And it seems like that's the whole – the carrot that's hung before him in a lot of these subplots is that maybe I can get rid of this.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's never going to happen.
It's never going to happen. Right. That's a tragic moment. And again, it's kind of this – in a series of relationships where Dexter opens himself up and they just never seem to go well. And that one seemed honestly the most hopeful, and I almost wish the writers had revived that character and somehow brought her back in, because that could have been a really powerful thing. But maybe too much of a happy ending. But in the same sense, I do think, like, yeah, there is a realization in that moment. It's a tragic one, that maybe I'm just not normal and I never will be, you know, that I can't ever master this. You know, it sort of reminds me of an addict who relapses and the kind of the absolute disappointment and this sense, I will never, ever conquer this. You know, and somebody else might, or it's different for people who are not like me. I can't ever conquer this. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a, I think it's a Ronald Rollheiser quote where he talks about, you know, one of our deep fears about prayer is that when someone finally reveals who we are, they will be as disappointed in who we are as we are in ourselves.
Right.
Hope is definitely a theme, and more of a hopelessness is a theme in the book. But one of the things you point out is that there's another central theme, is that's the theme of justice,
right,
which is a central part of the Dexter character. And here's a quote from your book: "The genius is that Dexter's violence, however stylized, resonates with our deep-seated sense of justice." So how is justice a central part of a story of a serial killer?
Yeah. Well, the code is really the key there. The code is the guideline that Harry, Dexter's adopted dad, gives him in order to help him channel this urge to kill into what seems to be, at least, the most positive direction one could take something like that, namely to only kill those who have killed before and show signs that they will kill again. That's Dexter's code, and so he has to fundamentally abide by that. Of course, the first rule of the code is don't get caught. But after that, it's only kill those who've killed before and show signs they'll kill again. So
You make the statement that the definitive moment in the series is at the beginning, when Dexter is told by Harry, who Harry's a police officer, if you don't know. He's a police officer, just found out that a bad guy who killed a good cop is going to go off scot-free. And, you know, Dexter's obviously confused as a teenager about this. And Harry makes a statement: "No, the world can always be set right again."
Yes.
Which I think that's the heart of what justice is setting the world back to rights, to use N.T. Wright's language of setting the world to right. So Dexter sees himself as a tool to bring justice to the world.
Yes. Yes.
And your line is that the code is a babysitter for a man otherwise out of control. And I love the comparison you make to Old Covenant and New Covenant. Actually, when I was reading that for the first time, I made a note and said, I wonder if he's going to go Old Covenant, New Covenant with this. And you jumped right into it. So I'm picking up what you're putting down exactly on that.
Awesome. Yeah.
So how do we see the Old Covenant be replaced by the New Covenant in the story of Dexter?
You know, if the Old Covenant is mainly about again restricting or perhaps protecting people from their own vices, from their own tendency toward doing the wrong thing, then it really is an external restraint. It doesn't have anything to do with the heart. It doesn't have anything to do necessarily with a fundamental change in the posture of our heart and in the posture of our being. And so Dexter is under a restraint. It doesn't change him fundamentally, but what it does is keep him safe. It keeps innocent people safe around him, and in that sense, it's very much like the Mosaic Law, the sense of an old covenant that is inferior to the new covenant that deals with the heart and that creates and accomplishes a fundamental change in our deepest being. So that's how I mean, and in a way too, it's kind of interesting because Dexter is always sort of making cracks about the code and about the fact that, you know, mainly this is kind of a sham. I am not really believing in this. I'm just doing it because this is what keeps me safe.
Really? I didn't ever pick that up. Do you have any examples of when he was disrespecting the code?
I'm trying to remember back to some specific quotes, but anyway, the one sense that I got is that Dexter would honestly say things like there was a frustration that would emerge in several cases where the code was preventing him from killing someone he really just wanted to kill, you know, and he would say, well, I just can't do it, but I would if I could.
We've all been there. We've all been there. The eighth season, where I think it's actually in the finale, he talks about his desire to not want to kill. And instead he has a stronger urge to not be at his table, which is, it's terrible to use the table language so much for those of us who are Christians who have a big high emphasis on the table ourselves. So it's kind of disturbing. But he says, I have a stronger urge to be somewhere else than to be here killing someone. It's almost as if that's coming to fruition, that this new covenant of love and relationality is stronger than his desire to kill.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And I think and that really is the kind of the trajectory of the story, or seems to be at least, that what's starting to happen as he forms these connections, these authentic connections, he has a son and realizes the depth and power of his love for his son, that he wants to be better. And that desire to be better, that belief in becoming something better than this this dark urge that he feels, is starting to become more powerful than the urge itself.
Yeah.
And so the code, which was created to restrain the urge and channel the urge in order to keep him safe, in order to keep him out of trouble, in order to keep innocent people safe, obviously, actually begins to be superseded by this desire to become better.
Yeah. The I think she's a psychiatrist, Vogel, makes some statements about, he was never really a psychopath. She makes a point that when Dexter complains that she didn't reach out to him when his father passed away, that isn't stereotypical sociopath stuff. Like, let me just tell you a story. My brother used to live down in Houston, and he was getting a tattoo late one night, which is why, kids, you shouldn't get tattoos, because what's going to happen in the story. And he's in there with his best friend, his best friend's fiance, and it's late at night, and three guys walk in with guns, and the tattoo artist is about 95% done with my brother's tattoo, and he's interrupted by these three gentlemen who walk in, and one of them says, you knew this was going to happen to you, or something like that, pulls out a gun, shoots him right in front of my brother. And then my brother runs out of the chair, and the guy starts shooting at my brother, and he ducks behind a counter, and I guess the guy empties his chamber shooting my brother. He gets away from him. My brother's fine. Obviously, the tattoo artist passes away right in front of him. The next morning, my brother calls me up and says this happens. I'm like, there's no way that happens. I don't believe you. This is. And then he sends me a link to the news story from Houston television station. I see his car and I go, oh my goodness, this is real. And the end of the story is these guys finally got caught because they killed someone else. And in a matter of a week or so, they've killed multiple people. And the last person they kill is someone who's driving by him and has a nice set of rims on his car. And so they shoot him at a stoplight and you know, police here and they come catch him. But the weirdest thing about the whole story to me is that the alpha dog, the guy who was doing the main shooting, the next morning was back at work at the tire shop a mile and a half down the road from where he killed someone. Like, the weirdest thing to me is that this person is not on like some coke binge and he's not fried out of his mind. He's not high or drunk. He's just going about like a normal life. Like, that's, I think, what a sociopath does. And that's what you see Dexter not doing. It's like there's parts of him that are not disconnected from all reality, like that guy is.
Right.
And I don't expect
to. Yeah, yeah.
Sorry to try to make you follow up after that story. But you see Dexter from the beginning, there's signs that he's pointing away from that. At the end, it seems like he almost gets there, right?
Mm. Yeah, no, I think he really does. Yeah, yeah, it's very close.
And then the finale. All right, before we talk about the finale, which, by the way, this whole podcast is really just a guilty pleasure of mine. You know, I started this podcast as an excuse to talk to people I want to talk to about things, and I binge watched Dexter, and so I needed someone to talk to. So thank you for being that person for me. Okay, let's talk about the way specifically vocal, upfront Christians are portrayed in the series. Mm. Now, I'm always interested in how Hollywood or the media or whatever wants to portray Christians. And obviously there's some bad ones in the show. Some ones you go, oh, that's kind of embarrassing. I would say probably Trinity is the best example of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he's a deacon at his church and he's killing people the whole time.
Yes. Yeah. He runs a nice little charity that's building houses for low income. Yeah, he's a good guy. He's a good guy, you know.
Has there ever been a connection to his character, John Lithgow's Trinity character, with the BTK killer? Because I feel like there is some connection, and I'm not a serial killer expert by any means, but it seemed like that was a similar story where you have a guy who is heavily involved in a church, yet he's still doing awful things. You have so you have Trinity as a terrible Christian. The doomsday killer, Travis Marshall, is this lunatic. And then you have the hypocritical jock in that season five or six or whenever that was. But in the midst of all that, you've got one really good Christian character in there. One guy you go, that's what I'm talking about, which you know I'm talking about, Brother Sam.
That's right.
Is there really a better Christian on TV than that guy? I don't know if there is.
Yeah, I think I might have actually gone into mourning when they killed him off so early.
Yeah,
in that season. Yeah, and you know there was honestly something about him that seemed to speak to the soul of the entire show. You know, and the fact that he was this reformed criminal gave a hope that perhaps we hadn't seen up until that point, that Dexter could potentially go down this same path. And what I loved about Sam was that he, you know, simply wouldn't allow Dexter to get away with vengeance, and attempted to convey that desire to avenge would be the thing that destroyed him the most. And yeah, I don't know. There was something about him, you're right, that made the whole show seem like it had a soul to it.
It really did. And I loved his language of, I see the darkness in you, Dexter, but I also see your light.
That's it.
You think Dexter ever felt like there was a light in him before that? Do you think that was an epiphany for him, or that relationship was?
I think it had to have been. Yeah. Because again, he knew, you know, Brother Sam kind of knew because he had been there in a sense. He had killed before. He knew Dexter's darkness. He had experience with it. And the fact that he could say, I also see your light, had credibility, you know, and it had a weight to it that I don't think Dexter had previously experienced from someone else. Yeah.
You know, the interesting, one of the things about your book that I found really interesting is that you had to, of course, use the substitutionary atonement metaphor when you're describing the relationship with God, because the whole show of Dexter is about blood, right?
It is.
And so
it is.
Your only real club that you can swing when it comes to atonement with a book about Dexter has to be Substitutionary Atonement, right? You see Sam, I love the dark to light imagery as well. I mean, that's another way to explain what Jesus did on the cross, which is basically what atonement is. Atonement is describing what Jesus did for us on the cross. And Sam has a picture of darkness and light. And I love the idea that Dexter can come out of the darkness and go into the light. Even if he never gets there. And so let's talk about the finale for a second. I watched it just the other night. And then I went on the internet and read a bunch of stories, and not one person says anything good about the finale.
Oh, everybody hated it.
Did you hate it?
I know. Well, this is how I think I had the advantage of having read a bunch of the reviews before watching it, because I waited until it showed up on Netflix, because we didn't have our Showtime anymore. Oh. So I went ahead and just kind of had already seen when it aired all the responses to it, and I thought, man, it must be just terrible.
Yeah.
But in watching it, I didn't come away with that same kind of emotion. Maybe I was slightly prepared for the worst, but I had a feeling that, you know, there is something appropriate about this ending tragically. And I don't know if we want to spoil too much, but I think the writers were attempting to wrap it up. My heart of hearts, I kind of wish that Dexter was maybe 5 or 6 seasons rather than 8. I think it was maybe just belabored a little too long, and the storyline was stretched a little bit too much, and that could be the reason why the ending felt awkward. But I still think it was appropriate. It was appropriate.
Really? Now, I had a couple of thoughts. First of all, I wasn't as hateful of the finale as everyone else. I saw it and I thought it was extremely heavy. And as a father, I know you're a father as well. The thought of him leaving his son was the most painful thing to me about it. And I'm going to go ahead and spoil it. If you're listening to this podcast, you've had plenty of time to watch it. So sorry, but the ending that I thought and I saw coming was him in the chair about to be executed. Because I felt like Harry had subtly said, this is where it's going to end up. This is where it's going to end up, which is why he taught him to be so meticulous about not getting caught. But I felt like that's where it was going to go. And I read an interview in which one of the former executive producers and writers who left after season 4 said that's how he pictured the ending going. Wow. But Showtime supposedly didn't want Dexter's character to die off. And so I wonder if Showtime wanted a spinoff or they want him to come back. And so I think that kind of handcuffed the writers into how they're going to end it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's very possible. That's very possible. Yeah. I know. And I know for a fact that there was always a tension around, the possibility of a happier ending. And I think from the beginning, it just seemed like, and I think it was an interview with Michael C. Hall that I saw that where he said, you know, his influence on the writing process was such that, you know, he kind of wouldn't let that happen. He said, this has to end badly. And
stories of serial killers can't end happily. That's
they can't, right?
And,
yeah.
And a lot of people think
even that was my deepest hope was that, I mean, this, you know, again, it might not be good television. But my deepest hope was that there would be a sense of resolution to this inner struggle at least. And I think, if I'm reading between the lines, I think it was the opposite, honestly.
Exactly. Yeah. And whereas some people are upset because he didn't get killed, like he didn't go to the chamber or whatever was going to happen that they felt would have been him getting what he deserved. They were upset because people at Miami Metro didn't find out who he actually was. Right. But if the arc of the show is his humanization, like him becoming connected to others, he got the absolute worst because all of his progress was washed away. Absolutely. And he's completely dehumanized. And he's by himself. Yeah. He's alone. He's not connected. And in some ways, a story of a serial killer cannot end well. And there's nothing that would have been worse for him than to be completely dehumanized, which happened to him all over again.
Yes. Yeah, I think in a way getting his just desserts for the fact that he had killed people or something would have almost confirmed Dexter's own journey in a way that would have allowed him to come to terms with things, you know. But I think the way it ended was much darker and kind of ended with him in that isolated hell that he always felt he was heading toward and embroiled in that dissocial spiral. You know, it really did end up in a total fragmentation, and his very existence resulted in mayhem, in death and destruction for all the people in his life. I mean, that and the person that was closest to him. So that, you know, that I think, again, it's the tragedy of this darkness that he could never overcome, fully sort of flowering into this destructive end.
Yep, you're right. And one of the things that was also very destructive is that beard that he had. He did not have an impressive beard like you do.
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah, I said in my brief Twitter review of the finale, I just can't get mad at beard and plaid, you know? And
that's good.
For me was fitting, just because it involved a guy with a beard and some flannel shirts in the background.
Yeah, he had a lot of flannel shirts. Are really nice looking. Yeah. Now, usually we end the show by doing a little game where people can dispel rumors, but we have something else for you. We have something else that I feel like is more thematically appropriate on a Dexter review podcast. And so there's no truth, there's no rumor in this one, but what it is basically a tutorial that I feel like you need to give us. Okay, are you ready for this? This might be pretty stretching for you. Okay. What is the best way to tell one of your friends that they remind you of Dexter? Without, you know, because whenever you say, hey, you remind me of a sociopath, it typically doesn't go well. So how is the best way you can tell your friend, hey, you remind me of someone who's extremely mentally disturbed?
I think the way to do that is to first point out their good qualities, you know, maybe to pull a little bit of a Brother Sam and say, hey, look, you know, you're a nice person. I just fear that underneath it all, you're completely psychotic.
And you're going to kill me one day.
And you're likely a sociopath who wants to destroy all of us. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's good. That is good. Well, hey, Zach, thank you so much for your time. People can go to Amazon to get the book. It is Nothing But the Blood, The Gospel According to Dexter. Your blog recently switched over to the Pathos Network, and your blog is entitled Nuance, the Nuance blog.
Nuance, yep. And it's still zhobe.com gets you there.
Okay, and then I'll jump you over there. Great, yeah, and people can follow you on Twitter as well. So, Zach, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it, and we'll talk to you again later.
Thanks for checking out Newsworthy with Norsworthy. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. You are now adjourned.